Good afternoon. I will be describing a varicella outbreak in a residential home in Connecticut for adults with disabilities. I would like to begin with a brief background on the epidemiology of varicella disease in adults. Varicella disease in adults is uncommon in the United States because most adults have naturally acquired immunity. Data from active varicella surveillance sites between 1995 and 2005 showed that adults comprised only 2 to 4% of varicella cases and reported outbreaks. In addition, national seroprevalence data from 1988 to 1994 showed that at least 95% of adults 20 years and older were immune to varicella zoster virus, or VZV. For this reason, birth in the United States before 1980 is considered to be evidence of immunity to varicella for the general population and was included as part of the definition for evidence of immunity to varicella in the 2007 Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, guidelines. In December 2008, the Connecticut Department of Public Health received notification of a varicella outbreak in a residential facility for adults with disabilities, which I will refer to as Facility A for this presentation. Due to the uncommon occurrence of varicella outbreaks among U.S. adults, the Connecticut Department of Public Health invited CDC to participate in an EpiAid investigation. Facility A is operated by the Connecticut Department of Developmental Services, or DDS, for adults with disabilities. At the time of the outbreak, it employed approximately 145 staff, including 20 nursing staff, and housed 70 residents. The facility consists of three residential buildings, labeled buildings number 1 through 3. Residents in building 2 are typically more physically independent and have fewer chronic conditions. Most residents have profound or severe intellectual disabilities and require at least some physical assistance. Almost all these residents attend an outside day program every day during the week. However, residents in each apartment do not intermingle except at day programs and facility-wide social events, such as holiday parties. The objectives of this investigation were to document the extent of the outbreak among staff and residents in the facility and to determine risk factors for disease. We also wanted to describe challenges associated with case management and outbreak control in this type of setting. A varicella case was defined as a generalized macular papular rash with or without vesicles and without other apparent cause occurring after November 1, 2008 in a resident or employee in Facility A. Cases were identified either by chart review or facility healthcare staff. We reviewed residents' medical charts and interviewed staff that care for residents. Staff case patients were interviewed using a standardized case investigation form. We collected serologic specimens for IgM and IgG testing. We also collected any available scab and vesicle specimens for PCR testing and genotyping to distinguish them between wild type and vaccine strains. Lastly, we collected environmental specimens from residents' bedrooms and common areas for PCR testing and genotyping. Specimens were collected at two time points, the first in January during the outbreak investigation, and then subsequently 2 months after the rash onset of the last case, to determine if VZV could still be detected in the environment. This is an epicurve of the outbreak showing three generations of cases with rash onsets between December 4th and January 7th. There were 13 cases, 11 cases among residents, and 2 cases among staff. All cases that occurred among residents occurred in buildings 1 and 3. There were no cases that occurred in building 2. Shown in red, in the red bar, are cases among residents in building 1. The purple shows cases among residents in building 3. And the orange shows the two staff cases. We identified a possible shingles case, shown in green, who may have been the source of the outbreak. I will talk more about this case in the next few slides. We also identified a community case in a non-facility resident who attended the same day program as some of the case patients. This case is shown in blue and labeled as day program. As part of outbreak control measures, the facility conducted a varicella vaccination clinic on December 30th, shown in the first arrow. The outbreak investigation started January 12th, soon after the rash onset of the last case. I am going to show you a map of the case distribution in buildings 1 and 3. On the left is building 1, and the right is building 3 with identical floor plans. As you saw in the epi curve, the outbreak started with 5 cases in building 1. It then spread to additional cases in building 1 and also cases in building 3. The last case in the third generation occurred in building 3. Transmission is believed to have occurred in common living and dining areas. However, transmission between buildings 1 and 3 is likely to have occurred in day programs or the transportation vehicle where residents between these two buildings had an opportunity to interact. This table shows the attack rate among residents and staff. The attack rate in buildings 1 and 3 among residents was 33% and 13% respectively. The overall attack rate among residents was 16%. There were 2 cases among 145 staff, resulting in an attack rate of 1%. This slide shows the characteristics of cases among residents. The age range was between 32 and 49 years. 2 cases had prior disease history, both in 1989. In talking with staff, we learned that there was a varicella outbreak that occurred that year. I would also like to note that there were only 10 out of 59 non-cases with documented prior disease history in their medical records. None of the cases were vaccinated prior to the outbreak, and 5 cases had at least 50 lesions, with 1 case having over 500 lesions. We were able to collect specimens from 5 cases, and we were able to laboratory confirm 3 cases, 2 with IgM testing and 1 with PCR testing. All these cases attended 1 of 2 day programs using 2 transportation vehicles. The 2 staff cases occurred in a nurse and caregiver, aged 28 and 33 respectively. Both developed a rash with over 250 lesions on December 22nd and were furloughed from work until their lesions scabbed over. Both staff worked in Building 1, and the nurse had actually cared for the initial staff cases. Neither had history of varicella disease or vaccination, and 1 of the staff cases was born in Haiti but had come to the U.S. 7 years ago. During our chart review, we identified a possible shingles case who may have been the source of the outbreak. This was a 41-year-old male who was the roommate of the first case. He developed a localized vesicular rash with less than 50 lesions on his right arm on November 17th, 18 days before the first case. His rash lasted for 8 days. He had prior documented history in his medical records, but he was initially thought to have a fungal infection at the time of his rash, and so his rash was not covered. We were able to collect 71 environmental specimens in January during the outbreak investigation. We were able to detect wild-type VZV from 9 of 11 case patients' beds and belongings. We also detected VZV from the bedroom and wheelchair of the possible shingles case. We collected specimens from the common areas of all 3 residential buildings and the transportation vehicle used to take some of the case patients to the day program. We were able to detect VZV from the common area of Building 1 and the transportation vehicle. However, we were not able to detect VZV from the common areas of Building 2 or 3. As I noted in the methods, we collected additional specimens 2 months after the rash onset of the last case to see if VZV could still be detected in the environment. We collected 25 specimens in March and found that VZV could still be detected from several of the case patients' beds and belongings, as well as the common area in Building 1. We compared the demographic characteristics of cases and non-cases to determine if there are risk factors for disease. We excluded residents from Building 2 from this analysis because they were relatively isolated from residents in Buildings 1 and 3, and they tended to be healthier. On average, cases and non-cases had lived in a residential facility for 30 years. The average age when they began living in a residential facility was 10 for cases and 15 for non-cases. This difference was statistically significant. Approximately 90% of cases and non-cases had profound intellectual disability, and a higher proportion of cases required full physical assistance. We also examined whether there was a difference between the proportion with immunosuppressive conditions between cases and non-cases. However, we only found 1 case patient with an immunosuppressive condition. There were a number of procedures implemented as part of outbreak control measures. First of all, cases in buildings 1 and 3 were isolated to their rooms or apartments until their lesions gapped over. Non-case residents living in affected apartments who were exposed were not allowed to leave or attend day programs or weekly social gatherings for 2 weeks after the rash onset in the last case. The facility recommended that staff check their immunity to varicella with individual providers and get vaccinated if they were susceptible. Finally, the facility vaccinated 54 of 55 residents thought to be susceptible with 2 doses of varicella vaccine 4 weeks apart between December 30th and February 17th. There was a resident who developed a vaccine-associated rash 18 days after her first dose of varicella vaccine. She was vaccinated December 30th and developed a macular-papular vesicular rash on her face, trunk, and legs with less than 50 lesions on January 17th. We were able to detect vaccine strain DNA from her skin lesion specimens, as well as environmental specimens from her bedroom collected in January and March. Shown here is a picture of the vaccine-associated rash. This outbreak demonstrates the potential for at-risk pockets of adults susceptible to varicella. Data presented at last year's National Immunization Conference on a long-term care facility in Georgia found that 15% of residents born before 1980 were susceptible to varicella based on serologic testing. Adults born in the U.S. who have lived in residential facilities for most of their lives may not have the same opportunities for exposure to varicella as the general population. For this reason, birth in the United States before 1980 may not be predictive of immunity to varicella for these populations. As a result of this outbreak, the Connecticut Department of Public Health and DDS amended their guidelines to no longer accept birth before 1980 in the United States as evidence of immunity to varicella for similar settings. Laboratory testing of clinical and environmental specimens are important tools for investigation and control of outbreaks, for assessing immunity, confirming an outbreak, and detecting vaccine adverse events. Environmental sampling may be useful in confirming an outbreak in certain situations when clinical specimens are not available. In this outbreak, we were able to detect VZV DNA from several varicella cases in the possible shingles case after their rashes had resolved. However, results need to be interpreted carefully because it does not indicate viable virus, and it may represent viral shedding unrelated to the outbreak cases under investigation. There were a number of challenges to controlling an outbreak in this type of setting. Firstly, there is a higher risk of transmission because of the constant close contact between residents. Secondly, isolation of cases is challenging and labor-intensive. In this outbreak, the facility could not keep cases isolated alone in the room at all times with a closed door because they required 24-hour supervision for their personal safety, and many of them had roommates. Thirdly, it is difficult to quarantine exposed non-cases because it requires extra staff to monitor these residents. And lastly, due to the learning difficulties of these residents, it prohibited them from understanding outbreak control measures or following basic infection control practices. Based on findings from this outbreak, we recommend that facilities consider ensuring protection to varicella for adults who have lived in residential facilities since childhood, even adults born in the United States before 1980. We also recommend that healthcare staff be screened for immunity to varicella and other vaccine-preventable diseases prior to employment, which are included in the current ACIP guidelines. For healthcare staff who are born in the United States, birth before 1980 should not be considered evidence of immunity to varicella. Since healthcare staff are in contact with high-risk patients, it is important that they have confirmed immunity to varicella. For healthcare staff who are not born in the United States, they should be screened for immunity to varicella regardless of when they were born, since the epidemiology of varicella may differ in other countries. Facilities may want to consider screening other non-healthcare staff in residential facilities depending on their level of contact with residents and the proportion of susceptible residents who cannot be vaccinated because they have contraindications. For these non-healthcare staff, birth in the United States before 1980 can be considered evidence of immunity to varicella. Staff should remain alert for potential shingles and varicella cases and quickly implement appropriate infection control measures. In conclusion, we believe the source of the outbreak may have been a shingles case. We found that populations who have lived in residential facilities since childhood may be more susceptible to varicella disease in adulthood, and controlling outbreaks in these types of facilities is challenging. For this reason, screening residents and healthcare staff for varicella immunity and other vaccine-preventable diseases is important for preventing outbreaks in this vulnerable population. Finally, laboratory testing can play an important role in controlling and investigating outbreaks and identifying vaccine adverse events. I would like to acknowledge the many collaborators on this outbreak investigation, in particular those listed in yellow. Thank you.
This presentation is now open for questions. I think Jessica summarized very nicely the lessons learned. I think it would be helpful for people. We've been using environmental samples lately in the recent years, and I would want to ask Jessica to give us some details whether there are specific requirements to collect or to ship these environmental samples.
Well, first off, I would just like to say that clinical specimens are still the best way to confirm an outbreak in a case. And if you can collect a vesicle or a scab specimen, those are the best types of specimens. And Scott Schmidt can add to my response. But if you choose to collect environmental specimens, what we did was we took a polyester swab and we moistened it with sterile PBS and kind of just swabbed a 2x2 area. We tried to target areas that we thought residents would be handling a lot, like their belongings or their bed. I know that in the past, I think Adriana worked with an outbreak where they swabbed dust. So that's how we did it in this outbreak. Oh, in terms of shipment, I think you can just ship it at room temperature. There's no special requirements.
Well, if there are no further questions, we can conclude the session. We thank you again. We wish you a nice afternoon.